Suppose we start with a prayer again. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Seed of wisdom. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. He is on the papacy. Over the centuries, the Church has allowed errors of all kinds to beset the Church that he founded. The reason, we believe, is because through the dissemination of error, those who wish to believe feel more clearly and deeply understand what they believe because they have to cope with, answer to, and explain to their own minds what they believe in the light of the prevalent errors. If the purpose of the first course is to better understand the real presence, the purpose of the second course is to better understand the papacy. And the logic that we are following for the second course is to choose outstanding opposition, organized heretical opposition to the papacy that has arisen in what we're calling modern times. As we also said, historians commonly identify the origin of the modern world with the rise of Protestantism. We saw something about that in our last class. There is no way we can exaggerate the importance of seeing Protestantism as anti-papal Christianity. It is not only that Martin Luther, who broke with the Catholic Church, wrote some of the most, and I have to use the word, unprintable manuscripts in what he said about the Pope. Vicious is a mild word. It is not only that Protestantism began by a priest who left the Catholic faith and then spent his years till his death in 1546 in writing and speaking against blankety blank of Babylon, whom he identified as the Bishop of Rome. Once he started Protestantism, which is essentially anti-papalism, his ideas have remained and have continued to pervade the Western world. If the first major break with Rome took place under Martin Luther, John Calvin, Zwingli, Cranmer, and their followers, the founders of what is called Protestantism, the second major break began with the bishop called Jansen or Jansenius, a French Catholic bishop in a town called Ypres, Y-P-R-E-S. Jansenius was really a Protestant, thoroughgoing Protestant. However, he was in charge of a Catholic diocese. Shrewdly, Jansenius did not publicize his intellectual break with the Catholic Church. But he spent years writing one book, only one book. The Latin title is Augustinus, English Augustine. In this book, Jansenius concentrated on the single most fundamental error of Protestantism, which Jansenius bought. He lived a double life, externally professing to be a Catholic bishop, in heart being a staunchly convinced Calvinist. John Calvin, as you know, was a Frenchman. Now, the core of John Calvin's teaching, which then Jansenius adopted, the core is what we call absolute predestination. What is absolute predestination? Absolute predestination is the claim that from all eternity, God has predestined some people for heaven and others for hell. By implication, therefore, no one merits his or her eternal salvation. The word merit, M-E-R-I-T, will never occur in any writer who is Protestant and is sober and sane, except to blast it. Because merit means, as we Catholics believe, what we earn by our cooperation with our free will by the grace of God. Calvin spent years writing his Institutes of the Christian Religion. Jansenius, we don't know when he became a Calvinist, whether before he became a priest or bishop, or later on. At any rate, he finished his book and never published it. It was published after his death. Now, as soon as the book was published, it was condemned by one pope after another. Masquerading as Catholicism has deeply infected the Catholic Church. Once you deny that we have a free will with which we can cooperate with God's grace and thereby merit heaven, then all kinds of other errors follow logically. To describe how deeply, I repeat, Jansenism has affected not only the Catholic Church on its Protestant side, but I would say the whole Western world. Remember what we said both last week, and I think we repeated it briefly in today's class. Among the basic errors of Protestantism is the claim that Christ never founded a visible church. For Calvin, the church is composed of all those who are predestined. Who knows who is predestined? Finally, only God. However, society would be chaos unless someone on earth had authority. And what Protestantism did was, having erased the church as a visible institution, divinely authorized to teach the people what to believe with their minds and how to behave with their wills, they did the logical thing. The church was replaced by the state. Not to know that is not to know the ABCs of our American culture. Countries like the United States profoundly, deeply, widely penetrated with all the basic principles of Protestantism. When, for example, our Supreme Court decreed 1973 that the murder of unborn children is legal, millions of Americans accepted this teaching, and I mean every syllable, as the law of God. We go on. By the beginning of the 17th century, many professed Catholics were seduced by the errors of Protestantism. This included not a few bishops. Within a quarter century of the Bishop Jansenius's death, 50 dioceses in France were totally Jansenized. The most famous of the bishops who accepted Protestantism and remained a bishop was the one about whom today's class is being conducted. Born in 1585, he died in 1638. A professor of theology, then became bishop, as we've said, of the Diocese of Ypres, Y-P-R-E-S. Jansenius lived and died, as I think I've said also, with a reputation for being a Roman Catholic. In reality, he was a Calvinist. And had the heart of the Catholic teaching over the centuries has been the existence of both the grace that comes from God. Catholics all believe, if they are Catholics, that the grace comes from God. But secondly, Catholics believe that they have a free will with which they can choose to do whose will? Everything depends on the answer to that question. We believe we have a free will to choose whose will? God's will. That we have a free will to choose God's will and thereby be saved. Oh, the tragic, and I mean tragic, not just errors, but evils in one Western nation after another begin to make sense. For some years, I would visit a federal prisoner in Virginia. He told me this prison is just too small for the number that are, well, imprisoned here. Small rooms made for one prisoner. Now two and three in that one room. The bond did not pass for building, well, another or a larger federal prison. All the prisons of the world multiplied will not be enough to, shall we say, incarcerate people who do not believe they have a free will with which they can choose between doing their own will and the will of God. One of my dear friends, a priest chaplain in St. Louis, called me up one day. I've shared this with some of you. The United States is now becoming a national prison. The whole country is one big jail. And those in charge of this prison are running our country. On the Eucharist is important as a gift from God, without which he could not reach heaven. This course is of paramount importance to know what is our part, our role in reaching our heavenly destiny. When our souls leave the body and our body begins to decay and rot. Every one of us. Body will die, and decay, and unlike Jansenius, we believe we have a free will with which we, of course, depending on God's grace, for the grace will never be wanting, provided we have the readiness to cooperate with the grace He gives us. We go on. We believe, it's our faith, and those reach heaven who receive the grace to be used. But for Jansenius, same word, grâce in French, Gnade in German, whatever language you speak. But grace for Calvin, or now Jansenius, the Catholic bishop, who died and was buried in consecrated Catholic ground. Grace is what you receive. And if you have received that grace, notice, if you have received it, then you are predestined. No one else reaches heaven except those who receive the grace. Jansenists, and of course he is the founder of Jansenism, Jansenius spent a lifetime writing, as I've said, one book called, again we've said, Augustinus or Augustine, which is simply the Latin for the name of St. Augustine. Now, some explanation is needed. Why did Jansenius entitle his book Augustine? Because St. Augustine, as I'm sure you all know, until his early 30s, he lived a very, well, sinful life. Once converted, however, he became not just a fervent priest, but a strong and zealous bishop, Bishop of Hippo in North Africa. There were two major heresies that plagued the church in the time of St. Augustine. They were Manichaeism and Pelagianism. Manichaeism, Manichaeism, and Pelagianism, Pelagianism. Augustine wrote volumes defending the Catholic faith against both heresies. In writing against the Manichaeans, for whom, that's the Manichaeans, there are two gods. A good God who is responsible for everything good in this world, and an evil deity is responsible for everything which is bad. In other words, in Manichaeism, there is no free will. Pelagianism, which is the other heresy, started by a British monk by the name of Pelagius. For Pelagius, There is no grace. It is only free will. If you have the willpower, you'll get to heaven. If you have a weak spine, you'll go to hell. That's Pelagius. Augustine, I repeat, spent a lifetime refuting both heresies. However, it was especially St. Augustine's writings against the Manichaeans. Remember the Manichaeans, in effect, denied that we have a free will. Augustine, therefore, in refuting the Pelagians, insisted on God's grace. In refuting the Manichaeans, insisted on free will. Hope I'm clear. Both heresies were prevalent at the time of Augustine. Now, in Augustine's writings, he sometimes used language that was so strong on the necessity of God's grace to be saved. Therefore, the Manichaeans, remember, those are saved, well, who are predestined by the good God. For the Pelagians, those are saved who have the grace. Pardon me. Those are saved who have the free will. They don't need grace. So it was especially St. Augustine's writings against the Pelagians who denied the necessity of grace that Calvin built his whole religion. Calvin is a genius in Protestantism. Now, Augustine, in refuting the Pelagians who deny the necessity of grace, it's all free will. He sometimes used such strong language on the necessity of grace that, taken out of context, some of Augustine's statements may seem to indicate that he did not believe in a free will. Moreover, this needs to be said. Almost everything that Augustine later on, we might say, published, he never wrote. He had scribes putting down his homilies, writing them out. And there were several scribes because they couldn't keep up with Augustine. At any rate, before Augustine died, he published a book, most unusual. It's called Retractations. Because he spoke so much, and sometimes in the heat of speaking, his emotional zeal, he would say things that when he read what his scribes wrote down, did I say this? Yes, Master, you said this. Oh, no, I shouldn't have said it. A whole thick book of Retractations Augustine published. What did Calvin do? And Jansenius followed Calvin. Calvin chose all the passages from St. Augustine where Augustine so emphasizes the necessity of grace as to, well, underestimate, overshadow the use of our free will. Am I clear? Calvin knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing. He chose and picked in Augustine's writings. I counted in the standard 2-volume work of Calvin, which for my work I have to study, read these heretics. More than the hour, I counted over 1,100 long quotations from St. Augustine in the 2 basic volumes of John Calvin. When I traced those passages back to Augustine, every one of them was chosen out of context. In other words, Calvin denied free will, is all grace, and deceitfully claimed this was the teaching of Augustine. That is why the bishop, Jansenius, wrote his book called, as we've been saying, Augustinus or Augustine. According, therefore, to Jansenius, man's free will is incapable of any moral goodness. The word freedom, and choosing between good and bad, does not exist, hear it, in the Protestant vocabulary. And we American Catholics have been deeply, I have to use the words, deeply infected by our Protestant culture, deeply. All man's actions is now Jansenius, proceed either from concupiscence. Remember, that's our fallen human nature. As Luther said, every act of what we call our free will is a sin. It's all we can do. So all of our actions proceed either from our fallen human nature, which means sin, or from heavenly desires, which are produced by grace. As human beings, we never have a good desire. Whatever good desire we ever have is always, always, the grace of God. All of our desires are always, and that adverb is of the essence of Protestantism, and for our purpose, at the heart of Jansenism. Each of these calls and drives of our fallen human nature, the urge to sin, or the desire to do good, influence us in our wills, which consequently lack freedom, we always follow the pressure of the stronger desire. That's Jansenius's genius. Implied in Jansenism, therefore, is the denial of the supernatural order. In other words, the possibility of either corresponding with or rejecting the grace of God. Now the Pope's come in. Jansenism was condemned as heretical in 5 major propositions by Pope Innocent the X in 1653. It was recondemned by Pope Alexander the VII in 1656. Why? Because the Jansenists, and I repeat, bishops, 50 French bishops, following Jansenius, claimed that their doctrine was misrepresented. The later developments of Jansenism were built on these 5 principal errors condemned, as we've just said, by Pope Innocent the X and Pope Alexander the VII. Now, an important, most important aspect of papal authority. Not only were the teachings of Jansenius condemned, but for the first time in papal history, the popes declared that what a previous pope has condemned as heretical in Jansenism was exactly what Jansenius meant when he wrote his book. Am I clear? In other words, papal authority, I could now talk for hours, papal authority was clarified by Jansenism to a degree and in a way never before known in Catholic history. It is not only that Jansenius' doctrine was condemned, basically his denial that we have a free will, but later popes condemned and proclaimed that their teaching was infallible. They taught that what Jansenius was saying was justifiably condemned by previous popes, because in Jansenius' mind, was what the previous popes had condemned. Am I clear? A pope infallibly defined what Jansenius had in his mind. It was the heresies that Jansenius had indeed taught. All those heresies were condemned by previous popes. The Jansenists would not give in. Finally, the Pope had to resort to the incredible decision of condemning the writings of Jansenius and infallibly teaching what was condemned by my predecessor is exactly what Jansenius had in mind when he wrote his book. Talk about authority of the Pope. Now, let's look at those condemnations. 5 basic condemnations of Jansenius. Do you have them?
Yes.
1 page print out. Number 1. There are some of God's commandments that just men cannot observe with the power they have in their present state, even if they wish and strive to observe them, nor do they do men have the grace which would make their observance possible? In other words, we human beings are not just fallen human beings, but the weakened human nature. All that we are capable of doing is sinning. Second, there are some of God's commandments. Second, in the state of fallen nature, eternal grace is never resisted. Oh, I cannot tell you. I'm now repeating my 50th year in the priesthood. How necessary it is for us to believe that we have the power to resist God's grace. I think I told you the story about my Sunday homily, 10 o'clock Mass, in St. John's Parish in McLean, Virginia. Remember, some of you? And a homily prepared, but the previous Saturday afternoon and evening, the two pastors were out, they asked me to hear all the confessions. I thought to myself, my gosh, how will I cope? 11 people read a confession all afternoon and evening. 11. Here I am, ready for my homily to a crowded church, standing room only. I knew just about everybody would come to communion. I said an aspiration, Lord, should I do it? I thought he said, go ahead. I began, my dear friends, I never thought I would preach a homily in the holiest parish in the United States. I was hearing confessions all day yesterday. I counted the penitents. 11 came to confession. During Mass this morning, most of you will come to communion. I just cannot imagine, knowing human nature, you're all in the state of grace. I'm happy to report, and I mean it, almost one half of the church did not come to communion. Next Saturday, confessions by the hour. I'm speaking from a lifetime of priestly experience. We can resist God's grace. And that's the essence of sin. Thirdly, the merit or demerit in the state of fallen nature, it is not necessary for a man to have freedom from necessity, but only freedom from constraints. These are clever words. These are taken verbally from Jansenius and the Vatican, with the Holy Father's authority, chose and picked the 5 fundamental errors of Jansenius from a thick book. What's the difference between freedom? Number 3. Freedom from necessity, but only freedom from constraint. It is not necessary for a man to have freedom from necessity, but only freedom from constraint. Watch this. I mean every word. Our freedom is internal freedom. A lot of people don't even know that. It is not just freedom from compulsion from the outside, not merely freedom from coercion, not merely freedom from pressure. We have deeply, deeply internal freedom, where there is no compulsion whatever from anyone, from anything. We are free to choose what we want. And why? Because we want it. Over the years, I have come to know many persons who have done graduate courses in and even doctorates in criminology. Those who have specialized in criminology tell me they don't have a single textbook, used in courses in criminology that recognizes internal freedom. In other words, that we are truly free from within ourselves. No pressure from the outside. No constraint. No coercion. We choose what we choose because I want to choose. And of course, living as we are in, and I use these words advisedly, in the most coercive society in the world, America.